can make sure for tomorrow that we have this room. It's better because we see each other. When we talk, we have to see the faces, to see how they react, if they are sleepy or awakened. Oh, yes, yes. Interested or bored. So, now I have discovered yesterday that you do not do things which are advised to you because you didn't read all what I asked you to read, especially in the Encyclopedia of Islam. So I decided to make it compulsory. You have to do it. If not, you will not have your exam. You want that we work like this. I thought you were adults with a strong voluntary commitment to decide by yourself, but you are unable to do it. This is what I discovered. So in that case, I have to act as a policeman, just to apply the rule. So you have to give the paper as we decided on 30 April, but I can postpone it a little bit, maybe to the end of May. Well, what's your program for the until the end of May? You are here, or you? So we make it for the end of May, the paper. But on 30 of April, you have to give me a report showing that you have read all the following articles in the Encyclopedia of Islam. And not to copy all the articles, of course, this would be a stupid exercise, but to make the proof that you have read the articles and you have read it as a student who is taking notes, identifying what is important, what is less important for the subject of our class, which is, I remind you, if you forgot it, Sharia, Fiqh, and Positive Law. You forgot the title, and you forgot the meaning of the title, and you forgot the intent of this class, as I explained it in the beginning. Because there is a subtitle to the title. The subtitle is, what is it? The subtitle. Huh? Reconsidering. Reconsidering. This is all the program. All in this verse. It's not just to collect, to say that there exist lawyers, Abu Hanifa, the Shafi'i, that they wrote this. I don't mind of this. What is important for studying Islam today? What is the most important for studying any subject of Islam? For taking seriously the study of Islam, what is the most important? Tell me. For you. Yes? Well, tell me, yes, methodology, what it means. Not only methodology. There is methodology and there is something which I told also, but you forgot it. There are two things that you have always to put in mind. Whatever is the course given to you about Islam, if it is on architecture, if it is on painting, if it is on poetry, if it is on literature, if it is on the beliefs, if whatever is the subject. You have to put in mind two things. Methodology, as you said, and?
Society?
No. Society, it's obvious.
You said the question, the right question.
And this?
Ask the question.
Yes, problematizing. It is called problematizing. Arranging the kind of problems that I have to consider for each field I am studying. And problematizing is an intellectual process. I want to exercise you in the intellectual process. I do not want at all, I of course it's important to know, to be informed that Shafi'i exists, that law exists, that istinbat al-ahkam, what it means. You have to know that. But here, for a professor, this you can know by reading books. You can know by reading the encyclopedia of Islam. You don't need me. But to control how you are reflecting, to control how you are using your reason, when you read a book, when you write a paper, this is what you cannot get from books. A professor is here for that. Not to make a narration, what happened, what didn't happen, whatever. This is not... you can stay at home for this. Why coming to London? Spending money and doing all what you do. You can do at home. But hearing a professor telling you, here is the way. If you want to read the Quran, with intelligence, you have to know the process of raising problems about any kind of reading applied to the Quran. This you don't know. And you will not get it from any professor. That's why, in the medieval ages, people were traveling from Cordoba in Spain to Isfahan by feet. Why? Because they heard that in Isfahan there is someone who is giving a teaching about law, exceptional. They cannot find a man like this. So they go. I want to hear that man. This is talabul ilm. It is named talabul ilm. It's a tradition in Islam. And it's not only a matter of memorizing. This you can do at home. And if you happen to become yourself a professor, if you address your teaching only to the memory of your pupils or students, you do a very bad job. You have to awaken their sense of raising problems, their ability to recognize a problem, and their ability to make an hierarchy between the problems that you have to raise and to consider. yes, you can travel, leave your family, and spend a time with a person who can give you this. That's why I'm angry with you, because you didn't understand this. I have to repeat it. And because I left, I couldn't come. I live abroad, not in London. I told you that I live abroad. Don't mind. Nothing has happened. And this I tell it, I shall tell it to the Board of Governors to take measures for this, to change the selection of the students. We do not want students like this, who do not mind, who do not listen. Do you remember what I told you last year with my students at New York University? You forgot it also? To challenge you. American people, American students, they do not have to do anything with Islam. They took interest. In only 6 weeks, they read all what I asked them to read. And you are unable to mention even the title of the book or the author of the book. I cannot tolerate this. I'm traveling to teach you from Morocco to here, and I find people like this. I cannot accept this. So I told methodology, problematizing, and problematizing as well as methodology includes another exercise, which is called epistemology. What is it, epistemology?
Study of knowledge. Study of knowledge,
different knowledge. I don't understand.
Study of knowledge.
The study of knowledge. Articulate, please. The study of knowledge. Which study of knowledge? Just the study of knowledge?
Different forms of knowledge. How to articulate different forms of knowledge together to study the courses.
Any other one who can tell something about epistemology?
Study of where knowledge comes.
Did you buy the book, the dictionary of modern thought? You have it? It's at home, or you look at it in the library? It's at home. Everyone has it. Yes. This you need absolutely. It's basic. It's not the Oxford Dictionary which will give you the meaning of epistemology. It is a specific dictionary which will explain to you exactly what a word like this, which is a very important concept. Epistemology, it is the knowledge about knowledge. It is the critical knowledge about knowledge. Because you can produce a mountain of knowledge. If this knowledge does not take into consideration in the process of producing that knowledge the critical evaluation of each page of knowledge which is written, that knowledge is not reliable. We cannot use such a knowledge. That's why when you read a book, you have to be able, of course, you have to know how to reach that level. But you have to be able to raise epistemological questions about the way and knowledge is proposed to you. For example, the articles of the Encyclopedia of Islam I'm going to mention. You know, this encyclopedia, it has now 10 volumes, big volumes. You saw them at the library. Each volume is a big one. They started to write it in 1953. Exactly now, 50 years. So you have long time to elaborate such an encyclopedia. Which means that the first volume, if you want, for example, to read the article Ad, because it's the alphabetic order, you read Ad. It has been written for the first volume in 1953 or 4. Now this article has to be rewritten. It's outdated. And you have to know this. There are things, of course, which might be still useful. But the way the article is organized, the way the subject is presented, is not yet anymore valid. Because so many books have been produced since that time. And even an article which has been written, for example, last year, if a book has been produced yesterday, just come out, and this book brings such new facts about, for example, the Risala of Shafi'i, to tell, for example, that this Risala, we thought so far that it has been written by Shafi'i. Suddenly we discover that it has been wrongly attributed to Shafi'i. It's not his work. It's a work which came later. This is scientific research. And you have to know it immediately. So that when you read the article, you say, oh, okay, I know how to proceed. This is scientific activity. Scientific knowledge. Knowledge is not a pure accumulation of facts. Unfortunately, in all Muslim world, even today, knowledge about Islam, especially about Islam, is still a pure accumulation. No methodology, no problematization, even less epistemology. Epistemology is the unthought yet in contemporary Islamic thought. You know that title, I hope. Who read the book?
I couldn't get through it. I didn't understand them.
Yes, you don't understand, you see. Yes, I understand that you don't understand. But I ask you to make more endeavor to understand it, because it is understandable for those who have the will, the strong will, to go through that book. Because I changed totally the vocabulary. I'm not using the ordinary vocabulary, the ordinary language. How can I tell you epistemology? The ordinary language never used that word. But human mind, to advance in his knowledge, has to change the tools for knowledge. Imagine this, that the surgeon to make an operation on our body, he comes with tools of surgery going back to 19th century. You will be confident to give him your body? And for this, oh, you can mix words from 18th century or from 9th century, it goes the same, doesn't change. Like I told you, for reason. There is a history of words, and there is a deep change of the technical conceptualization of knowledge. Here is another word that you have to consider. Conceptualizing. Conceptualizing law, for example. Conceptualizing Islamic law. What does this mean? It means reconsidering all the vocabulary which has been used so far by all those who practiced the search and the teaching of what we call fiqh. Fiqh in Arabic means what?
Knowledge.
This is a secondary meaning, but the etymological meaning of fiqh, faqaha yafqahu, al-faqih, al-ladhi yafqahu, yafqahu al-ilm, yafqahu علم الدلالات. For example, it is having a deep and refined knowledge. This is the meaning of faqaha, the verb faqaha, yafqahu. And the Quran says afala tafqahuna walakin akthar an-nas la yafqahuna. It doesn't mean they are not interested in making law, in studying law in the Quran. Faqaha. Quran uses faqaha, yafqahu. It means having a deep, rigorous, intimate knowledge. Intimate knowledge. It's a very strong verb. And they have applied it to law, because law is absolutely central, and it requires a refined intelligence to practice it. Without a good intelligence, you cannot manage to enter in the field of that discipline, which is a highly sophisticated intellectual discipline. It is a highly sophisticated intellectual exercise. This is fiqh. So you see how to go through words, not just to use it and say, okay, fiqh is law. And you don't know the importance given to that law, to that discipline in Islamic thought. Until now they call it fiqh. Not law. Fiqh doesn't mean law, primarily. Yes? Ooh, yes?
Yes. How can we distinguish the word brought in Quran from their original meaning in that time of Arabia? And as you said, there might have been words which the Quran brought a new dimension or new meaning to it. How can it be?
Yes, before the Quran, the faqh means understanding very well, having a good, exact understanding of a word,
so,
or of a language.
Our primary
understanding.
We regard first of all on how was that word used at that time of the Arabia?
Yes. Because in the time of the Prophet, there is no fear in the sense of a discipline. There is no such a discipline. It is a discipline created afterwards. And they called it fiqh according to the meaning of the word in the Quran, which is what I explained to you.
And are there instances that they devolved a word separate from what it originally meant to be?
How he?
As you said, the concept of fiqh was evolved later on for other things.
Of course, yes.
Are there differences?
Different?
Differences between what they then house, it means, and for them it means something.
No. The Quranic meaning of fiqh is still there. When we say fiqh, to refer to law, the study of law, we have in mind, people have in mind, in the time people were knowing, who know well the Quran and the vocabulary of the Quran, they know that. So this didn't change. What changed? It is the concept of reason, as I explained. I told you in the Quran, the form aql doesn't occur. And the reason evolved when philosophy was introduced. And then there is a rupture between the meaning of reason according to the philosophical corpus compared to the way the Quran is still using the verb aqala yaqilu, when it says afala taqiluna. So there are some words which are totally changed. Similarly for the word ulum. Now when we say ilm, ulum, we are referring to scientific knowledge. We are not referring to religious knowledge. In the Quran it is religious knowledge, the way to know God, to approach the notion of God, and God as a person, as he presents himself in the Quranic discourse. The person acting, ordering, commanding, speaking, etc. So, for example, about epistemology, I have an article here that I ask you to read especially. It is in a book published recently, which is called Progressive Muslims. I have just got this article from Shiraz, who has the book. He didn't put the name of the editor of the book, because it's someone has told me yesterday about this book, Progressive Islam. Who told me? No? So it's another person. It's not one of you. Anyway, there is the chapter 7. It is written by Kesia Ali. K-E-C-I-A Ali. And the title is Progressive Muslims and Islamic jurisprudence the necessity for critical engagement with marriage and divorce law. So you see the title. The title responds to the title, the subtitle of our talks. Because the author is reconsidering Islamic law concerning the problems raised today by marriage and divorce, which is so important for our society and so important for women. Because in many Muslim countries, marriage and divorce is still under the rules dictated by fuqaha in medieval ages, not yesterday or last year, and they are unchanged because Muslims are saying what jurists have elaborated about marriage and law and inheritance has a divine value, a divine status. So we cannot change it. There is no one jurist who has the ability to change it, because he would pretend to change rules which are given by God Himself. This is the way it is working now. In many countries, in Iran, for example, in Algeria, in Morocco, in Egypt, this you have to know. You are not imagining the importance and the amount of problems and the tragic situations created for women, totally dominated by their husbands. Because a woman cannot go to a judge, ask for a divorce. She has no right for this. Unless the husband accepts. And on the contrary, the husband, according to that law, it is sufficient for the husband to say three times the formula, you are divorced. Three times. It's finished. Just he says this. Ritually, three times. You are divorced. Anti-Italian. Finish. You see? Isn't it tragic for women today to be submitted to such an arbitrary situation? And women are fighting for changing this. In Morocco, the king has changed this very recently. Very recently, until 1 month ago. All women in Morocco, and in Morocco the society is very modernized. So many women, absolutely modern, in their life, in their conception, in their culture. But when it comes to the law, which is called the personal status, which is commanded by Islamic law. And when we say Islamic law, we are meaning divine law. But I explained yesterday that this law is the result of an intellectual exercise of jurists who had to go from the text of the Quran to the law. This itinerary to go from a verse to a law, a rule of law. This itinerary, who made it? How Shafi'i, how Malik ibn Anas, how Ja'far al-Sadiq, who came later, 100 years after the fact, how did they manage to write down a law for marriage, for divorce, for inheritance, for how did they do this? Because it's not put all in the Quran. The Quran is not a full code of rules. In the Quran you find a verse, but the verse is general. A judge cannot judge, base his judgment only on a verse. It's not put in a clear juridical form, as it is in the code, in the official code. So the passage from the level of the verse to the level of the code that the judge at the court take and open and read to justify his decision when there is a conflict between the husband and the woman. Who did this? Do you understand this question, or you don't understand it? What's happening there? Because if you do not understand this, you will not understand the difference between Sharia, the concept of Sharia, and the name of a discipline elaborated by men, only by men, women, males. Also this you have to remind. Never any women took part, any part, in that exercise. And until today, the Mufti, the person who give opinions about several issues, so far, the Mufti is only a man. I never heard of a Mufti woman in any part of the Islamic world. If you know of anyone in Tajikistan, please tell me that I get in relation with that female Mufti to congratulate her and to see also how that woman is facing the responsibilities of such a function, because there are intellectual responsibilities in exercising that these functions, and how as a woman she can accept to follow the reasoning developed by men about issues like divorce. If we find a woman who can engage in that direction, which is, I don't know, it's like the women I told you yesterday who went in the Republic in Paris to remain under the law of the veil. What's to say? And these are the problems of law. So I picked up this chapter to help you. I don't know if you are going to read it or not. This is again your freedom. But this text will help you with the condition that you become able to identify in this text where are the points of criticism as used by the author, which can be considered as valid points as he uses it. When I say valid, it is from the point of view of methodology and the point of view of problematizing the issues. For example, if he stays only inside the discipline of fiqh, inside the texts of fiqh, to examine the situation today, without making any reference to modern law about divorce and marriage. If he does this, what would you say? What would be your reaction after you read the text? What would be your reaction?
Huh? It will be the repetition of the same thing if he remains within the boundary of the field and he doesn't consider the modern approaches. It would be again the repetition of the same thing which is traditionally repeated in the field.
Yes.
I think if he goes back to the real meaning of fair and how the first thing considered as work and love, building upon the existence both of what fair means and what is right now in the 14th century, but actually going back and excavating the whole thing again, that is awful. But if he wants to go out of that sphere of the fair, he would be defenseless in the sense that they would say that what you are saying is irrelevant to that discipline.
Yes. There are three possibilities. I didn't read yet. I received the paper just now. So, but a priori, I can state about the content, and I can tell you how to read a text like this. Because what I'm telling you, it applies to any text. So this cannot be considered as a total exception. A text like this, we shall be faced after we read it between three possibilities. This is the methodology I'm teaching you. First possibility. He has chosen to speak about marriage and divorce according what has been stated by the classical books on fiqh. Belonging to one or two or three or four schools of law which are recognized by Muslims since 9th, 10th century. This is one possibility. He wants only to make it clear for people. So that it's not necessary to go back to all this big literature, massive literature. This is one possibility. Second possibility. The author, Kesia Ali, has read not only the Muslim literature on the issues of marriage and divorce, as it is stated in the books of Islamic law. But he has also read books produced by modern scholarship on Islamic law. What I call modern scholarship on Islamic law, it is all the books, you have many titles in your bibliography, all the books written on the history of the Maliki school, Shafi'i school, Hanbali school, Ja'fari school, etc. And in his presentation, he introduces a critic of the juridical rules as they are applied today. In Muslim societies, by establishing a new vision, a new interpretation of the texts according to the teachings established by modern scholarship on the Mudawwana, for example. We take Mudawwana is the code which is applied in Morocco for all matters relating to the personal status. Al-ahwal shakhsiyya. Do you know this expression? Al-ahwal shakhsiyya. Don't know it. You never heard it. Yes? But you don't answer. Who knows it? Who knows what it means? What al-ahwal shakhsiyya means? Do you know how to write it in Arabic? No, of course. Yes. to Shakhsiyah. You can see? Or it's too far? With good glasses. And those who don't have glasses, they can see too. Al-Ahwal means all the situations, the various situations in which a woman and a man can be engaged in their life. Al-Shakhsiyah, which belongs to their personal life. So there is a chapter in Islamic law which is devoted to this. And among the ahwal shakhsiyah, there is marriage, there is divorce, there is the status of women, the rules applied especially to women, like the veil, for example, like staying at home to take care of the children and to prepare in the kitchen for her children, her husband, and all this, ahwal shakhsiyah. That's why, for example, if the husband comes at home at 12:30 and he has to go back for his work and he didn't find the meal ready to eat quickly and go back, he is angry, he might beat her, his wife for this. Or he had a bad day at the office, he comes very nervous, and when he comes at home, he sees that something is wrong, he will find any kind of reason to relax by beating the wife. You have this or you don't have it? You never heard? No, so you are so civilized. No? Yes.
It hasn't got anything to do with the Islamic law, because in the Islamic law it says that the wife doesn't have any responsibility to breastfeed the children, take care of them, cooking, housework, and the husband, for all these work, has to pay her the appropriate payment.
Yes.
And if it's nothing done.
But in the law, you have the custom and you have the law. And the custom is integrated in the law, practically. What I'm saying is not written down in the law, but it is practice, custom. And this custom comes from the general principle, which says, وَلِلْرِجَالِ عَلَيْهِنَّ دَرَجَةٌ. What does this mean? Yes, may men have a degree above women. So such a proposition, it creates a psychology, and it creates customs, habits, which are not necessarily included in the law. That's why until today we find what I'm telling you in many societies. And if you look very carefully, you make a sociological survey, in Tajikistan, in Uzbekistan. Make a sociological survey. Maybe you will come with another view. In your home, maybe it doesn't occur. I'm not speaking only on Ismailis, because the late Imam, before the present Imam, has had a very strong position about emancipating women in Ismaili community. There are strong texts of the previous Imam about women. Of course, the present Imam also insist on that. So don't think, don't answer to me only from your experience as Ismailis. You have to look at the society, Muslim societies. Of course, things are different according to the customs. As I tell you, there are interwoven interaction between customs and law, what the law says. And the third possibility now. Yes, in the second possibility, what I am telling, for example, it belongs to a critic of the Islamic law, to point out to what belongs to customs and what belongs to law. This is a step towards criticism, because people in Muslim societies who are not studied Islamic law to be able to make such a criticism. And now we have anthropologists who study exactly customs and law, and who make a comparison and say, "Oh, this is not; it doesn't belong to Islamic law. It comes from the customs." For example, circumcision of the male and the excision for females. Excision. You don't know what it is. You are very civilized. What is the excision? This is for girls, young girls, to cut the how it is called. I don't know in English how you. Clitoris? Clitoris?
Yeah.
Yes?
The African tribes, huh?
Also in Pakistan,
no. It exists in many societies until today. It exists even in Paris. Yes? Because we have Africans coming from Mali who still have this practice in Egypt. Still, it exists. These are customs, not law, not Islamic law. Islamic law doesn't say about circumcision, but no one family, Muslim family, would miss to obey to this custom. What about Ismailis? You are all circumcised. No, or there is one who is not.
No, you are not. No, I want to.
Yes. We have to see.
Which is he narrated from Al-Mu'id from Yom Jabal, so from Ali.
about excision?
About this excision, yeah.
You have a text?
Yes, I will show you in the text, in the checkout with my view.
You but see?
Sorry,
yes.
In the
Arab.
Yes.
You
can
find
it. I read the book.
Arabic?
It's here.
Okay. Well, he's an Arab. That's why he doesn't. The Arabs do not look to customs. They look only to written texts.
It doesn't say that you should practice this. Someone asked it from Ali how to deal with this. He said, if someone do this, maybe it might be enjoyable for.
So I need this text.
Yes, I will. Translated in Persian.
It's in Persian.
Yeah, it's translated in Persian.
Do you have the Arabic version?
Maybe in the library, but I can.
You have to look to this because this is a very important point. Yes, yes.
Are you sure it's in the volume of the text itself? It's not in the.
You read all the book or you some pages of the book?
No, the book.
But did you read all the book? You have gone through all the book?
Yes, the 2 volumes. Yes.
2 volumes. Why you read it?
Because
it's in Arabic.
Yes.
So you read it in Arabic?
Yes.
Maybe it has been deleted in Arabic version. No. It can happen, you know. It depends on the scribe who has written the book, the manuscript. Because the scribe, if he doesn't like this, he deletes it.
The editor is, I don't know if you know him, Arif Tamir, he's the editor.
Arif Tamir.
Yeah, he's the editor of the version I read.
Yes. Yes, anyway. There is a problem there. Very interesting. So, please, you give the reference, the exact reference. In Persian, which book? Is it a translation from Arabic to Persian? Or is it a book written directly in Persian?
No, it is a translation.
Translated from?
From Arabic to Persian.
Ah.
Yeah.
So you have to give all the reference. Here is a point. This is philology. You see? I cannot say it doesn't exist or it exists. It's a point of inquiry. Here is the way. When you go to study the person of Ali, the figure of Ali, you have all the time problems like this. He said it, he didn't say it. He said it, he didn't say it. So you have to engage an inquiry about the text where you found it, the date of the text, the author of the text, the name of the translator, when it has been translated, etc., etc. A full inquiry, because this is an important reference about such a custom. And this we have to do for all the law, normally. And that's why I insist. Is he doing all this inquiry? Is he insisting, like I'm insisting with you, to do such an inquiry, to make things clear? Or he's just saying, usual knowledge, what he reads in the books, without raising and without problematizing. This is the process of problematizing. Concretely. Now, the third possibility. The third possibility is what I'm doing with you. And unfortunately, I repeat it because I'm disappointed you do not want to follow. Because to follow means that you engage your energy, that you want it, because you feel the importance of it. You are not only a student to have a mark at the end and go out, it's finished. No. It's something which concerns your life, as far as you belong to a community which is claiming that it is an Islamic, a Muslim community. If you are not interested in that, then your place is not here. Why do you come here? Go to a university, you study computer sciences, you study business, you study whatever you want. English literature, or you study whatever you want. Why do you come here? This is the point. Why do you come here? To spend the money of the community. You are spending the money of the community. And the community is awaiting something from you. And the Imam has designed this place for this. And why I'm coming to teach? Because I support the vision of the Imam about this. Since 25 years. That's why I'm angry. The third possibility is, of course, to master the two first possibilities. To master it, to go through it. I have to know the classical texts of law. I have to be able to read what Ja'far Sadiq has written, what Qadi Nu'man has written, what all the principal authors to whom we refer about Islamic law today, I have to know it. To be able to look at it like now, I ask him text. Bring the text and we are able to manage with it. We are able to read it. And we are able to answer to the question. Where this position come from? And to make the, to solve this issue. Because it is an important one. So the first possibility, we have to master it. The second possibility, we have to master it. We have to read all the literature produced by Western scholars, not by Muslim scholars only. Because Western scholars have a big advance on Muslim scholars, especially in this matter. Because Muslims are still sticking to maintain the law as it is. So they stop anything which would disturb the codes as they are applied today in Muslim societies. That's why Westerners, of course, they do not have such an interest. So they go and they look all the texts, they compare, they develop. And I told you, since only the last 5 years, there are more than 100 titles about this matter, which are changing our knowledge, about the history of Islamic law, which means the process of its elaboration. This we have to know absolutely. So, first, second, we must. We do not ignore it. Third possibility, what it adds to this. What it adds to this is the anthropology of law and the philosophy of law. Two things. Which are not yet enough developed, even by Western scholars. You see, I say Western scholars, I do not say anymore Orientalist, because Orientalist is a polemical concept. Orientalist is a name given to all European scholars in 19th century, in the time of colonialism. And all Muslims have developed, especially since the last 50 years, a radical rejection of all what these people, whom I call Western scholars, not Orientalists, in the line Edward Said has developed to criticize the literature produced but by those people called Orientalists. I'm not rejecting totally what Edward Said has said about Orientalists. But what I would like that you understand for your concern, especially for Arab people, you know what I mean. You cannot open your mouth. For example, yes, it was the beginning of January, 6th exactly, or 5th of January. I had a debate on the Jazeera channel. You know Jazeera channel? With a professor of Al-Azhar about the issue of Almania. Almania is the translation of laïcité in Arabic. The French laïcité we spoke yesterday. Because all the Arab world is upside down about this issue. And the first thing brought by this professor at Al-Azhar was to read texts criticizing Orientalists. He doesn't know at all that this page belongs to history. It has no relevance now about what Western scholars are publishing on Islam and all the disciplines related to Islam, except for another part of literature, the part called political sciences, what political scientists are writing today about Islam. Especially in the circumstances created in the world since Khomeini revolution, with quotation marks, revolution with quotation marks, many heavy quotation marks. Why we have to suspect epistemologically, methodologically, all the literature produced by political scientists, because this literature belongs to the whole political struggle, a radicalized struggle between what we call roughly and ideologically Islam and the West, Islam versus the West, jihad versus Mac world. You know the title, this title? By Benjamin Barber. Jihad versus Mac world. This is a battle. And it is a battle even in scholarship. A big battle. This, but still, political scientists, we cannot call them orientalists. Because orientalists have developed an activity, a scholarly activity, which no one can criticize, can tell. Criticize in the terms of telling that it is literature against Islam, it is literature against Arabs, it is a Zionist literature, all this stuff. The work done by Orientalists during 19th century up to the last 1960s. It is the philological work. Of editing scientifically with the rules of philology. Editing, for example, yes, I wanted to mention an example like Nahj al-Balagha. You know what it is, of course. This is a major text, Nahj al-Balagha. But of this text, which is so important, we do not have yet, until today, a philological edition. It doesn't exist. But Orientalists developed the idea already in 19th century, the end of 19th century. They have developed the idea of having a philological edition of the Mus'haf itself. The Mus'haf itself. Like they did, and they worked, and they are still working on a philological edition of the whole Bible. This is a major work. A major work to clarify so many problems. And Muslims are opposing totally to this. And never the books written to prepare that edition by Orientalists have never been translated into Arabic. And only those Muslims who are able to read the book in German or to read the book in English can have access to this scientific work. This you have to know. So I come back to the third possibility. What we are doing in this class. What kind of work we have to do for reconsidering the place and the functions, the place in law in general, including modern law, we have to figure out where Islamic law stands as a law compared to modern law. This is the major question. If we do not do that work, we are still standing behind. Behind the law as it is. The discussion about law as it is carried on among lawyers, professors of law in Harvard, in New York University, in Berlin universities, in Paris, in London, in Stockholm, in Tokyo, but not in Cairo, but not in Islamabad. But not in Algiers. This is the problem on which I want to catch your attention, to make it important for you. And hopefully, at least some of you get enough interest in that to specialize in the field. All of you, you know Mohammed Kishafji, who is the deputy of His Highness, traveling all the time, all around the world, for the community, for Israel, etc. In his age, and in spite of his heavy schedule and work, he came to London to prepare a thesis under a professor in SOS on Islamic law. I want some of you to take interest in the subject, because there is such a work to do, which is very important for the Ismaili community, and beyond the Ismaili community, it is important for liberating Muslim societies from dogmatic use of what they call Islamic law, without raising any question, and it is forbidden to raise a question, because it touches a dogma on which many political regimes today are relying to get their political legitimacy. this is done in many Muslim countries. These are the states of studying Islamic law. And this is the third possibility. I call it the third possibility. So, I include this paper as a compulsory reading for the papers you are going to present to me on the 3rd, on the 13th of April. Now I come back to the readings in the Encyclopedia of Islam. What time is it? Yes, we have time. I repeat what I told you already. Here are the articles that you have to read. First, Quran. Quran, as it is written in the Encyclopedia of Islam, because it has its special convention for transliteration from Arabic alphabet to Latin alphabet. For example, Quran is written like this. This is Ar. And it's written like this. Quran. I told you also, I told you so many things. You see, I have to repeat it. As if you were 6 years old only. What I told you about this transliteration? What did I tell?
You have to apply it for your paper.
Hmm?
You said that you have to
yes. Learn
and apply it.
Your paper should be written according to the system of transliteration of the Encyclopedia of Islam. If you miss to do it, I shall not look to your paper. I shall not look at it. I shall not consider it. I shall consider that you didn't give any paper. Yes, I speak like this. Because it is the only way that you do the work. You oblige me to do this. You oblige me. Second, hadith. How do you write hadith? Yes. You don't know. Okay. No. According to the Encyclopedia transliteration. Yes. I leave you with your knowledge. Third, Ijma. Ijma. Yes. Like this. And the fifth is Asl, Asl, Usul. Why do I start with these six, or I didn't count it? Five? Yes. No, not five, more than five. Quran, Hadith, Ijma', Qiyas, Asl, Usul. Yes, yes, five. No, Fiqh, I didn't mention it yet. Why do I start with these five? Everything has a reason. I do not go like this, in a disorder. Why? Why I start?
Why they take the important on the Quran? The first most of the they refer to Quran first, then they refer to Hadith and Ijma' that came.
Yes, and this is what is that?
The sources for.
Yes, this is the methodology as defined by the jurist in the discipline which I mentioned several times. It is the methodology. Not our methodology now, today, but their methodology. And today, if we have to reconsider the methodology of Usul al-Fiqh, and we have to, absolutely, we cannot accept it as it is, for epistemological reasons. We have to change, because their epistemology in 8th century, 9th century, 10th century is obsolete. It is an obsolete methodology. And jurists of today, they are not saying that it is obsolete. They are still working with it. Because it's forbidden to criticize it. If you criticize it, you are touching to the word of God. So you see, it's a built system. You touch to things which are related to jurists, people, ordinary people. If you touch to it today, it is as if you touch to the word of God itself, which is an extension, an arbitrary extension of the special status of the Quranic discourse to the discourse of law, which is the production of people like we are people today. What is the difference between Malik ibn Anas and we today? Anyone today? He's a man like all other men. He didn't receive any kind of illumination to do what he did. And if I say this about Ja'far Sadiq, I get into trouble. I can say it about Malik ibn Anas, about Ibn Hanbal, about, it's okay. If I have to give a lecture in Tehran or in Qom, as long as I'm criticizing all the authorities, the Sunni authorities, it's okay, go on. Give us more. But if it comes to Jafar Sadiq, who is one of the big voices concerning Islamic law in its Shi'i version, then shut up. Unless you tell what is acceptable to be told, what is allowed to be told. And the reverse, if I am speaking in Cairo and criticizing Jafar Sadiq and Qadi Nu'man, okay, go on. It's very good. But if I come to Ibn Hanbal, to Ibn Taymiyyah, and to Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, then it is a catastrophe. Especially Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, who is a jurist and the alim of 18th century, who became the big authority and the almost only one authority on whom Islamic law relies in Saudi Arabia. Do you have a measure of the importance of the problems of law today? Are you aware of this? Or in Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, maybe you have still the law imposed on you in the time of Stalin and Brezhnev. What happened? You forgot Islamic law in that time, or it was applied secretly? What happened to Islamic law in who is from Tajikistan? What happened to Islamic law?
It was rather that people in private they still used
it in private, secretly. Yes, not publicly. Yes. So now, after this, we have to read fiqh. Oh yeah, I forgot the word istinbat, which I mentioned yesterday. Istinbat, it goes with the usul. Then we get to fiqh, which is the discipline itself. And we get to tafsir, which is the exegesis. Tafsir. Exegesis. To be differentiated from ta'wil, which is interpretation. And then we have thukm, the word thukm, plural ahkam. Al-ahkam shar'iyya. Hukm, ahkam. To be differentiated from haqq, plural huquq, faculty of law today, in Arabic, we call it kulliyat al-huquq, and there is, on the other part, in the University of Damascus, for example, there is kulliyat al-huquq, which is the faculty of positive law, modern positive law, which is differentiated from kulliyat al-sharia, where you have Saeed Ramadan al-Bouti, your fellow here, you can give them a lecture about the role of Saeed Ramadan al-Bouti in Syria and outside Syria. Yes, I'm serious because I have no time to no. We have not.
Because we already asked.
You can make a special meeting for and tell them and yes, explain because he comes from Syria. And he has access to many things that you have not access to because of the language and also because of the experience. And an Ismaili living in Syria, Ismaili community in Syria, like one who comes from Bombay or from Mombasa, you have different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds. This is also a point for the Ismaili community. And these different backgrounds are not communicating enough. That's why we are bringing in this place young students from every community that you have the chance to discover the diversity of cultural backgrounds. But for this special point, it's very important that you tell them who is Saeed Ramadan al-Bouti and also Sheikh al-Qardawi, who are among many others, the two major figures who have a strong impact on the opinion of Muslims throughout the world. Because al-Qardawi, for example, is speaking every week to give fatwas through the Jazeera, the channel Jazeera in Qatar. And the channel Jazeera is reaching, each time Qardawi speaks at the Jazeera, on low, he can reach 100 million people watching television and asking questions to him through telephone from every part of the world. This is a new phenomenon. To tell you how the traditional teaching of Islam, supported by the media, is covering the whole Islamic world. While a teaching like the one I give here, or a teaching, modern teaching, which is given in other universities, especially when the teaching is given by Western scholars, this reaches at most 30 students in the class, which is absolutely nothing compared to 100 million people that you are conditioning in repeating and accepting the fatwas as it is given by those ulama. Very, very important. Yes, we have spoken about customs. We have to look the article. Oh.
عرف and عمل.
And then you have Qadi. Qadi, the judge. Like this. You see how it is written? And then you have had حدود لورد حدود which means the limits traced by God. وتلك حدود الله says the Quran. When the Quran speaks about rules to be followed, he says, وَتِلْكَ these are the limits put by God to you. So it's an important concept for law. And the difference between had and shuk. So this, all this is the vocabulary of law. The basic vocabulary of law that you have to know. And the least that you have to know is what is said in a short article. A concise short article in the Encyclopedia of Islam. If one day you are interested in law, then you will discover the ocean of law. The ocean of law. Yes?
I just wanted to get that. Is that copy of the article you have there for us to take and photocopy? Or would you mind if we just have it photocopied it after class?
If you can, I don't know, technically you can use the big volume to make a photocopy.
No, I mean the...
This article, yes. You ask Shiraz, he gives you the book, and you make copies for everyone. Yes, this he gave me himself. I need it because I have to read it. Me, I should read it. Yes?
Yeah, I have a point that I want you to talk about this concept we have done.
Yes.
Yeah, when you just said that if a professor you speak the maximum of 30, not to speak people, if you give people lessons like us, you speak the maximum of 30 students or so, while some of that following has I don't know, access to 100 million people every week, but I don't know if what you're trying to say is that this is why Qaradawi's example of Islam is more effective than, I don't know
he's more effective in terms of number, but not in terms of intellectual input.
Yes, because now I have two questions here. One is that reformers, I don't know if it's okay to call people reformers.
Yes, excuse me, because you remind me. You have absolutely to read
the Encyclopedia. This is a long article. Because it's important. Islam.
Yes, what you say. Reformers, yes, absolutely. This is a very important concept for law. Whether we have to read it like this, apply it like this or that, this is very important. Yes, please.
What I want to say is that reformers and Islam have always been accused of talking to people from above, like. That because people, you're wrong, and this is how it should be, or this is how it's better for you to be. But with someone like Qaradawi, or I don't know if you've heard of Amr Khalid.
Of course I heard.
Well, so someone like Qaradawi or Amr Khalid, they're so popular, they're everywhere. They talk to people the way people like to be talked to. So they don't use complicated term or so. I mean, when we use any complicated term, then we're sticking to I don't know, maximum 2%, 1% of the people, while they just use, people like Kalawi and Bulti and Amasali, they just use terms that people understand and like to hear. Well, of course, besides Talib and Tarib and these things, but...
So where is the question?
So yeah, the point I want to say is, how would you respond to this, that intellectuals, reformers in Islam, or Islahim in Islam, always treat people, come to people, talk to them from above, and while those sheikhs, they just treat people the way they like, the way people like to be treated, or they use their vocabulary, they use their manners.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, okay. I understand. I think I understand your question. Yes. To handle this, not a question, but it is a historical situation of all our societies. It's not special to Muslims. Because if you take, for example, all the channels of television in the United States, how many they have? All the channels are functioning like the Jazeera, addressing to people the language they want, the language they want. Because otherwise, if you don't use that language, the channel will collapse. It will collapse. It will not have enough money to sustain. For example, a special program where they would invite a professor of anthropology about Iraq today and to explain to all American people what is the society of Iraq in the last 50 years and what's the history of that society, especially in this time where Americans are there and doing what they do. And we see that in spite of this situation where such a program in a television would do so much good, it's not done. And in America you have an army of anthropologists who are able to give an information in a very simple language, not very, very simple, but like I do with you,